Hey everyone, this is Gail Smith, the editor here. I am, just so you know, this is the third episode, and thank you very much for making it this far. We had to work out audio issues and things that were beyond my control, and ideas that were that I had that were different in April that I now have, you know, currently. Starting next week will be the regular format for this show, where we have an introduction from yours truly. Then the intro song, and then the regular scheduled programming. So thank you so much to everyone that stayed with us so far, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to In Movies We Grow. Today I have Andy Comer on the show today. Andy, say hey to all the good listeners.
Hello, hello, hello.
And so, Andy, get you started. Give some context to the listeners and tell us just very quickly, very briefly, where are you from?
I'm from the Midwest. Been watching movies for as long as I can remember. Voiced, loved them. Actually learned how to walk by my family dragging the TV remote around the living room. I've always loved movies, even though, like, when I was a kid, most of them were crap, but still love a lot of those. And, you know, as I've gotten older, gotten into more complex and different movies that I feel like a lot of people miss out on, but I definitely enjoy them. And during this quarantine time, I've been averaging probably about 5 movies a day when I'm picking a movie. Otherwise, I power through a season of television. So I enjoy the content.
Nice. We were talking about that briefly. So what was the last thing you watched before this podcast?
The last thing I was watching an episode of The Office, because I knew that I didn't have a ton of time to finish any movies. But today, let me bring up my letterbox on my phone real quick, because I can't even remember. Today I watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Hook, and Rounders.
Nice.
Yep.
Very nice. So kind of not necessarily Rounders, but talking about Hook, did you see that as a kid at all? Yep. I don't know if you're, when was the first time you saw Hook?
When I was a little kid, I don't even remember the first time. It was probably my second film that I remember watching with Robin Williams, because Mrs. Doubtfire was the first one I remember seeing with him. But Hook, I always remembered like the Neverland stuff. And then it wasn't until about, like, I want to say about 10 years ago when I realized I hadn't seen it for a while. So I gave it a go. And then I realized all the stuff, like the real world stuff beforehand, which is, like, honestly freakier than I thought it, than I, like, could even possibly remember, like, you know, like Hook breaking in and leaving his note and like his Hook trail and all that kind of stuff. I enjoy the movie. It's good, or really good, you know, but like I understand why a lot of people put it lower tier Spielberg.
Yeah, because that's kind of the thing. I remember it being really good when but now it's like, you know, it's like, ooh, it's Spielberg trying to, you know, still be fun and hip, but it doesn't work. Or it doesn't hold up as well.
There's legit also, magic.
I think people are kind of not cool with the 2.5-hour runtime.
Go on. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go.
There's a lot of magic in it, but it just, like, isn't it, and you can definitely see, like, the Spielberg's touch to it, to, like, certain scenes, but it does kind of get a little meaty, a little fatty, I guess, like throughout like the middle section, but it like there's nothing in it that I would be like, this needs to be taken out. Like, it's just all stuff that, you know, kind of drags maybe a bit, but like every scene I like watching today, there was like no scene that I could think of that like, oh, this needs to be taken out. But it definitely does like feel a little they're like, there's access in it a little bit, like, but I just can't pinpoint it. But like the scenes where, you know, like, it's like, obviously Robin Williams was amazing, and the wonder in his eyes when he's like realizing his past and all that kind of stuff is all magical when he flies the first time, when he meets Tink, and then what's his name, who plays Hook, Hoffman. Like, literally I always forget that Hoffman is Hook. He literally like disappears. It's one role that he definitely disappears in, and for me it's one of his, it's my favorite role of his, because literally it doesn't even, like, I have to think about it for me to remember that it's him, because he is so good at Hook. So like those two balance really well. It's just all the extras, people, characters around them, besides Shmi, I would say Shmi, Hook, and him, but like Hook and him are like top level. But like everybody else kind of just like, you know, moves around and isn't as magical.
Nice. So what was the first movie you remember watching ever?
The first glimpse, like mental picture I have of me seeing a movie is Back to the Future. I remember vividly walking down the stairs at my grandma and grandpa's house into the basement. My uncle was watching a movie, so I walked in, and I remember seeing Doc hanging from the clock tower. That's the first movie image I remember ever seeing in my entire life. The first image I ever remember seeing in theaters is Batman Returns. And all I remember seeing, like mentally seeing, is Penguin rolling over the bridge into the water. But beyond that, like the first full length movie I can remember seeing is probably either Masters of the Universe or Land Before Time. One of those two movies was the first ones I recall watching all the way through. Land Before Time, I haven't seen nearly as much, but Masters of the Universe is by far the movie that I've seen most in my life. As a kid, whenever we went on Friday nights, me and my mom would go pick up a pizza. We'd go rent movies and such, and go, you know, hang out and stuff with her boyfriend's house. And every time that we'd rent movies, we would rent three movies. One of them was always Masters of the Universe. I don't know why she just didn't buy me one. Buy it for me, honestly. But it's one of those movies that movie is my childhood, and I've seen that movie far more than any other movie in my life. And a couple years ago, I even bought it on Blu-ray, and I literally watch it at least twice a year still.
And we're talking about the Dolph Lundgren version, right?
Yep, absolutely. Live action, 1989.
Wow.
Masters of the Universe. There's no movie in the history of the world that I've seen more times than Masters of the Universe.
Oh, okay. So why is that? Just out of curiosity.
When I was a kid, I don't know. I just loved it. So we just kept renting it, and I kept watching it. And then I would say I didn't see it for a while, between like 10 and probably 15 or 18, you know, somewhere in there. I don't remember. Like, I would see it every once in a while on like TBS or TNT, and I wouldn't like really stick around to it because I thought I was like a cool kid. I didn't need to see kids' movies and all that kind of stuff. And then I remember maybe when I was like 19 or 20, me and my friends were talking about like movies from our childhood, and I'm like, and I had asked if anybody of them had seen Master of the Universe. None of them had, because we were at Walmart and we were just like going through movies, and it happened to be there on DVD. So I asked, and none of my buddies had seen it. So I just bought it, and we watched it that night, and I just fell in love with it all over again. And I just love that movie. I don't like it. The camp of it, everybody, like, in this, like, now, like, as I've gotten older and stuff, when I got the Blu-ray and stuff, I listen to it with commentary and, you know, get the background information of how it was made, why it was made, decisions that were made and all that stuff. And that's me, like, now with movies, like how things happen during on, like, on set and why a movie turned out the way it did. Like, that stuff really interests me. So that made me find an even another dimension for me loving it. But I just love the characters and I love, you know, the little quirks of it, because it is definitely a quirky movie. Like, there's like little, like, I was watching it the other a couple of months ago in the living room, and my roommate came in, and like, literally I'm like looking down at my phone and while it's on, and then I just like say a line in a certain way and they look at me and start laughing, and then it happens on screen and they start laughing even harder. It's just like, it's just, you know, right now it's just baked into my DNA. I just love that movie so much.
Oh, that's kind of cool. So for me, I am not well versed into the canon log. I have only seen the documentary Electric Boogaloo, and that's how I know of the Masters of the Universe movie. And I did see it a while ago. It was free on YouTube, with ads, of course. But yeah, I really thought, you know, it was one of the better made of the canon movies that I've seen and that I know of, because you know, canon's just not well known for their quality. But yeah, I mean, I think that is cool. And I think if you were a kid back then in the 80s and 90s and you saw that with the show, I think that, you know, I mean, I think that's all really neat.
I think a couple of years ago on Netflix, there was a documentary about canon as well. I think it was on Netflix because
that's what I think.
That's the only way that I know that I would have come across it. So I don't, it must be on there. Definitely check it out because it explains like everything about that studio. And yeah, it was really entertaining.
Yeah, I would highly recommend watching the documentary, because it's so fascinating, and it's just such an incredibly ballsy and truly fantastical story.
Yeah, and if you're a person that enjoys commentary tracks, I've listened to a fair amount of commentary tracks, but I'm by no means like a person that listens to every commentary track. Like, there's a bunch that I haven't listened to, but like, there's people I've talked to on Twitter and stuff, and they've listened to way more commentary tracks than I have, but they have mentioned that Masters of the Universe is one of the more entertaining ones, just because of it's only Drew Goddard, who is the director, and he is just talking about what he remembers about it and like the process and everything, and they all agree that like everybody I've talked to has agreed that that is one of the best commentary tracks, just because of all the little anecdotes and like in the information that he gives about the movie.
You mean Gary Goddard?
Gary. Not Drew.
Drew is the one that wrote The Martian and created the Daredevil series. I'll have to look for that then, because the only commentary of Masters of the Universe that I've listened to is from Red Letter Media, where they, of course, make jokes and poke fun at the jokes about the jokiness and the campiness of it.
But, hey, I don't have any issue with people making fun of it at all. I totally get it, because I know that it is not a great movie, or like, you know, like it definitely is what it is. So I totally understand.
Yeah, and it was a very hard production because it was one of the more expensive movies that Canon had done. And it was one of the, you know, last productions they had that actually made it to the finish line and had any kind of big release.
And it barely got finished.
So yeah, they literally were almost done filming the movie, and then they had someone come on board and say, "Oh, we ran out of money. Can't film anymore. We can't afford to film anymore." So what happened was, Mattel saw the movie and they were like, "Well, we'll give you a few thousand dollars to finish the movie." And the only thing they had left really to shoot was the big sword fight climax.
Yep, in the commentary, he literally talks about, he's like, right, and then he like hits the point. He's like, right here is where filming ended that day, and they're like, we're out of money, you're done. He's like, I don't have an ending of the movie. He's like, we already shot the ending, like, you know, that's all done and all that, and that's good, but I don't have an end to the fight. So it's literally them in the middle of a grapple of a fight, and then there's no conclusion to the fight, and then it's the end of the movie, and everyone's happy. So he's like, I need another day.
Well, the problem with Masters of the Universe had more to do with canon and their kind of mismanagement of money, because they, you know, would promise, like, you know, this big sum of money. Like for Superman 4, for example, they promised a $30 to $35 million budget for the movie, and then they only could acquire a $17.5 million to make the movie. And so everything got scrapped, and, you know, or what, you know, already was, you know, tied up in deals, you know, a lot of the production budget got scrapped. So canon's kind of mismanagement of the money really did hurt Masters of the Universe in a big way. It's, and you can kind of see it in the last, like, fight scene of the production, but that's really it. So what other movies were you inspired by?
Loved Jurassic Park growing up. I had like little dinosaur toys from the movies. Batman. I had a VHS, like I recorded it on TV on HBO or whatever. My grandparents had HBO, so, or on one of those channels. So I recorded it, and I watched that all the time. Trying to think of what else. I remember I loved Tremors 2. My buddy and I used to watch Terminator 2 all the time when we were kids. Try anything else.
I love Tremors, by the way.
Yeah, I love all the Tremors movies, but like at that time, that's when like Tremors 2 was coming out and stuff, when we got into that. So yeah, I grew up watching Bert coming in, kicking ass and stuff, so that was fun. Yeah, I loved all those. Trying to think of other movies through the 90s that, like, I really, like, Mighty Ducks. You ever see the movie The Pest with John Leguizamo?
I think I heard something about it. What's it about?
He's this guy that is just, like, basically a con artist, and he's chosen by this eccentric, like, rich dude to, like, basically, it's like a comedic take to the Most Dangerous Game, where he takes this guy, to this con artist, to his island so he can hunt him. I always loved that growing up. And then this movie called Carpool, where these kids are on the way to school, and they get, like, taken by this, like, by Tom Arnold, who's, like, this, like, robber and stuff. I like that growing up. House Arrest. These kids' parents are getting separated, so they, like, lock them in the basement, and all their friends lock their parents in the same basement until they work out their issues. Stuff like that, like Disney Channel movies, which you can find on Disney Plus, all those movies growing up. I lived through Disney's, like, heyday, where literally they, like, there was, like, a year or two where every Friday or every other Friday they had an original Disney movie come out. And 90% of those were like genuinely entertaining movies. Like, that's when, like, Don't Look Under the Bed, Lucky the Irish, Brink, all that kind of stuff came out. And anybody that, like, has, like, Disney past, like, 2003 probably has no idea what I'm even talking to, because I'm talking about I think that was like 99 to 2001 ish. But, like, yeah, all those great Disney classics.
I remember this era.
Yep, all those great Disney classics were, like, popped out week by week. So those were awesome. The movie, like, that really changed things for me, though, was about 10 years ago when I was 22, Blue Valentine. I saw it at a local theater. It wasn't the theater I was working at, because we didn't get it. But I really wanted to see it because I like Ryan Gosling, and I had heard good things, and I was getting into, like, more serious, like, movies and stuff. And that movie just changed, like, me as an audience member, because it made me realize that, like, some some movies are just different, you know, the stories are just real, and it just like came at me from a different angle, and I absolutely loved it. And then that's when I started diving even deeper into movies, like analyzing them and seeing like what they were really about. And I'd say Blue Valentine was definitely the one that changed that, like, you know, cemented me as a person that will always love movies regardless of, you know, what they are actually about and all that kind of stuff.
So why was Blue Valentine the movie for you? That
because it was the first movie that I had seen, and I was just like jaw dropped. Like, I thought it was it's a masterpiece. It's one of my favorite movies, because of I've never seen any movie depict a relationship like that, and it feels absolutely real. And it just, before that, it never occurred to me that something like that movies could actually feel so real. I just figured that they were all just like, you know, stories or whatever, you know, some were based on real events, but you know, they don't really, most of the time they don't feel real, but that one felt absolutely real and heartbreaking, and everything about it just felt like it was something that could and had happened a million times, but nobody ever talks about it. And it just felt like I was, you know, because I saw it and I enjoyed it, and not a lot of people had seen it or enjoyed it. So I felt like I was kind of in a little club, I guess.
That makes sense to me. For me, the movie that really got me thinking more critically, got me thinking more intelligently about film, were movies like Inception, No Country for Old Men, The Social Network, Slumdog Millionaire, stuff like that, that got my juices going, because I was really feeling those movies and feeling them through their techniques and their artistry in a more deeper way than I had with other, like, big, you know, budget movies. Not to say that I didn't feel anything from them, but I was feeling more emotional, more authenticity during those films.
Yep, I can totally see that.
So what snowballed after Blue Valentine then?
Honestly, I don't know. Like, I just started seeing movies differently. Like, one second here. Let me take a look at movie, like, lists after that. Like, I'm just gonna go through my, like, you know, my top tens or whatever of the, like, the movie of the year since then. Like, before then, I probably wouldn't have movies like Parasite or, you know, Booksmart in my top movies. Social Network, like you just said, that hit a little different, I think, because of that. Birdman, probably would not have been into that. Ex Machina, I might have been, but probably not. Steve Jobs, I probably wouldn't love it as much, because it just feels more, you know, it's more about the story structure of the entire film and how it was made and about his life and all that kind of stuff. Silver Linings Playbook, I don't think I would have liked as much. And it really helped me love find my favorite movie, Lords of Dogtown. I think it was shortly after that that I had, you know, found Lords of Dogtown, because I didn't see that in theaters or anything. But that just, like, hit me in a certain way that I feel like I probably wouldn't have even gave it a shot. Brick is another one that I'm seeing that I probably wouldn't have liked as much. I Kill Giants came out in 2018. Disaster Artist, I, Tonya, Demolition, Arrival, stuff like that. Like, I don't think that I would have gotten nearly as into any of those movies as I would have without you know, Blue Valentine opening me up to that side of those movies. Like, I would have probably thought that they were fine, but it made me see the other, like, how deep filmmaking could actually go emotionally, because I don't think that I ever really registered how deep emotionally, like, the filmmaking process went into their characters and stuff. I just thought that they were, like, cool or, you know, entertaining or in some way, but I just, like, it was after that I started really feeling for the characters.
Awesome. So, just out of curiosity, and going back to your childhood, just for one more question, you and I both grew up in the Blockbuster age a little bit, you more than me, but I was kind of curious, what are your favorite kind of Blockbuster memories or even video store rental memories?
We had a family video that's now closed, and they had like a little play area for like the kids section and stuff, and then you go back and like when you walk in you had to walk through those detector, like the metal detector things, you know, and then there's the counter, you greeted by the people working, and then, you know, they had like all the movies spread out, but I remember all the way to the left they had like this little like area where they had slides and like little area where kids could be, you know, where buy their movies and stuff, and they could jump around on there and not distract their parents while they're like looking for movies. And then you go through this little doorway, not a screen or an actual door, but like, you know, and then that's where the horror section was, and I always loved going back there and just looking at all the movies, all the movie cases of all the horror movies, because I've always loved horror movies as well. I guess I didn't really say that earlier, but like ever since I was a kid I've always liked horror movies. My mom would always get angry at me for watching like Child's Play or Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, stuff like that. One fun thing, one time my mom got in trouble because when we were staying at my grandparents' house, when we were visiting, she kept falling asleep when I was watching Child's Play. She kept falling asleep, and every time that she would fall, I noticed that she fell asleep, I would flip it over to Child's Play, and I was watching that. She'd wake up, tell me to change it, you know. My grandparents came home right at the end of it, and they're like, how can you let him watch this, freaking out, because she's right there. And she's like, I was asleep, I told him not to, and all that stuff. So I always remember that, too. It was just kind of funny. Got her in trouble for letting me watch Child's Play when she absolutely would not, because my name's Andy, so like she always thought that that would like, you know, affect me in some way because the kid in the movie is Andy. But obviously it didn't. But yeah, and I remember like one thing I do really miss growing up with when it comes to horror movies also is TNT had like October completely like cut out, where there was like no regular programming. When I was a kid, it seemed like there was no regular programming, because every time when I came home they had like a horror host on and he would be talking about all these horror movies, and then they would just play movies during commercials. You'd come back and like, you know, engage with you a little bit, like talking about what's going on in the movie and then what's going on with the franchise or characters or, you know, in other movies or like actors, stuff like that. And like I always loved that and I miss that greatly. I really wish that there would be something like that again. But yeah, I just like remember going to Family Video and just going through and looking at all those. And every time that I had a sleepover or something, I'd always get my mom to rent Leprechaun 3. I remember that too. I love movies.
Leprechaun 3.
Because it was the Vegas one. That was the first one I saw. So I like didn't even think about looking like watching the other ones for like a while, but like that one I knew I loved, and you know there's boobs in it, so like when we're like a teenage kid, you're having a sleepover with a bunch of other, you know, like teenagers, you want to watch a movie, you want to like be like, hey, this movie has boobs in it, let's watch it, you know, like kind of stuff. So yeah, it's just
okay.
Yeah, it's just what it was. And I don't know, those movies, whether or not they're good or bad, they're the memories that I enjoy thinking about when I think about, you know, my life and movies.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing about horror is, I mean, it's a lot of fun to watch horror, and horror is, you know, much like comedy, you know, it's great to have a communal experience with it because you're in a room full of people that are also feeling the same thing you are. And, you know, that kind of high that that comes with it. It just, you know, it really kind of, you know, you're part of an experience, a part of a ride that, you know, you don't normally get in your everyday life. And that's why I think, you know, horror should have a little bit more credit, a little bit more, you know, looked a little bit more, but I mean, it's what it is.
Well, obviously one that I've like kind of been stepping around is Star Wars. The reason I've been kind of stepping around it is I feel like you're going to talk to a lot of other people and that's going to come up every time. So, I figured that I would talk about other things that, you know, might not come up. But I remember going to the theater, watching all the original trilogy getting re-released in 97 and all that kind of stuff. I saw all those in theaters then. And, I would say that's when it really blew up for me. I had seen the first one before that, but I don't recall if I had seen all three. I probably had, just because, like, you know, they play on TBS, TNT, and all that kind of stuff. So I'd probably seen them, but I don't remember watching all, like, any of them but the first one before I saw all three of them in theater. What else? I'd seen so many, like, literally I'd watched so many movies growing up. Biodome. I had that movie memorized in junior high. Like, literally, I won $10 off my mom because I quoted the entire movie. Because I literally quoted the entire movie. What else? Son-in-Law, thinking of Pauly Shore, the Son-in-Law was really good. I can do most of it, because I do own that movie too, and I watch it every once in a while. Not as much as Masters, but I watch that a lot. Basically, like, okay, did you have stars growing up? Did you have that channel?
No, I didn't have any premium channels growing up.
There was a time when we had stars and they had different, like, you know, channels. One of them was every week, four or five movies would be cycled, and every day during whatever week, the same movie would play at the same, like, two or three times throughout the day. And they would just cycle through five movies for 7 days, change to five movies for the next 7 days. So literally I had watched Biodome a couple times a day for like a couple days at this point, because I didn't own the movie, but I just kept watching it over and over. My mom got tired of it because she was like on her computer or whatever, you know, in the living room. And she's like, okay, you need to watch something else. And then I'm like, how about if I quote the entire movie, you let me watch it, you let me watch it. And, or we'll watch it until I like misquote the movie. And then I'm like, and throw $10 on it. And she's like, oh, okay, jokingly. And then she just went back to her thing, and I just kept talking and talking. She's like, and then she's like 20 minutes later, she's like, you haven't said anything that hasn't been on like the thing yet. She's like, what the hell? How many times have you actually watched this? And I just kept going, and I went through the rest of the movie. So it was just a thing that happened.
That's a skill. I don't think I can quote one movie, honestly.
I don't know how long that had lasted, because, or like that could have lasted, because literally, like I said, I'd been watching it like a couple times a day leading up to that. So like, yeah, it's just a funny story that happened. What else? I got into Tarantino in high school. Like with watching Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie. That was right around the time that was in between Kill Bill and Grindhouse. Yeah, I can't think of, there's like, as I keep thinking, like more movies are going to pop into my head, but like that, those are the big ones that are coming to my mind right now. Yeah.
So why do you think Tarantino is so, I wouldn't say influential, but such a dominating force in our generation?
I don't know for our generation, but for me, it's because he is the most consistent in terms of, I'm compelled by people just sitting around talking. You know what I mean? Like, there's not, Like, it's in it's in what they're saying, and they're saying things that, like, are both, you know, pushing the story along, but they're just sitting around doing nothing else. And I'm completely enthralled. All the, like, most of the characters are, like, you know, extremely entertaining and engaging. It's just the way that he writes them, and it's just highly entertaining, and I just love it. And because he, you know, I'd say for me, like, for my ratings and, like, how I've liked all of it, like, all of his movies, I'd say the only director that comes close to Tarantino for me is Fincher. And Fincher, like, Fincher's only, like, blemish is, for me, Benjamin Button. But every other movie, like, it's just so, the way it's shot, it just captivates what's, it has me captivated for what's on screen and what's being said, and, you know, the look of all of his movies, the sounds that he does and all that kind of stuff. It's just, those guys are just on another level of hitting my sweet spot. And that's why those two are probably my favorite directors.
Now I just need to have Tarantino write the script and Fincher direct the movie.
Hey, if Tarantino really wants to quit after 10, he can do whatever, and he can keep writing them and he'll give them to Fincher, whatever. But, I feel like that would, obviously that's never going to happen, but, like, I feel like that would kind of, like, handicap one of them, and the stories wouldn't come out as well, so I don't know.
You're probably right, because they're both so meticulous.
Yeah.
That, you know, and Fincher kind of has to constantly change things up. It's more just like, you know, but my dialogue is meticulous. I already meticulously wrote the dialogue, so
yeah.
I think
their meticulousness might yield weird results altogether. Well, Andy, this has been a very interesting conversation. So, are there any more movies or things that have inspired you or help you grow as we trail out of here?
Yes. Go watch Blue Valentine if you haven't. Go watch Masters of the Universe if you haven't. And yeah, you'll get to know me a little bit better, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, those two are probably the ones that have impacted me probably the most, I would say, based on, you know, our discussion here and, like, me thinking about this whole time. I'd say that those are the two most influential movies for me, setting up, like, the following, like, setting me up in the beginning with Masters and then turning a heel to expand with Blue Valentine. So yeah, that's about it.
All right, well, that's cool. So, Andy, where can the good people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter, at The Talking Can.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter, at Movie Kale. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We will be back with you next week for new episodes. And thank everyone for listening to the first three episodes thus far in Movies We Grow. Thank you, listeners. Have a good night.